going to be welcoming Katie Petruzziello, mom and children's author, to the podcast.
She's the author of the Mighty Mila series.
This is based off of Katie's real-life daughter, Mila, who was diagnosed with hearing loss at about 1 year old. She first wore hearing aids and then was implanted with a cochlear implant at age 3. What's interesting about this series is that it's not exclusively about her cochlear implant. It's about her navigating through different challenges. It's just part of the story.
So I think Katie's doing an effective job of kind of normalizing hearing loss, that kids are going to encounter kids who have hearing loss. And she also has a nice way of getting books out into the world and donating them through a special program that she has that we'll get to hear her talk about.
Let's hear more about it from Katie herself. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today. We're really excited to have you, to hear about your story, hear about your book. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Mila, the journey to finding out she has hearing loss?
Yeah. So when Mila was born with her newborn hearing screening, she referred in it. So she didn't pass the newborn hearing screening, but we went and we got her an ABR done to check everything at about 6 weeks old. And they came back saying that her hearing was within normal limits. It must have just been a blip during birth. We had no family history of hearing loss. And so they said, just keep an eye on things developmentally, make sure she's turning towards your voice, responding to sounds, right? The typical things that babies would do. And we did. And she was responding to everything. She knew her name. You know, she was developing as a typical child would. At her 1 year doctor's appointment, the pediatrician did a test on her ear, and she was very squirmy. She was kind of moving. The doctor said it didn't pass, but nothing to be concerned about. It's a very finicky test. Just go and let's check this box. Just go to the audiologist and just make sure. So went to the audiologist, still being like, all right, I just got to check the box. Like everything is likely going to be typical. And lo and behold, we found out, you know, after doing a Booth test, behavioral test, that she had mild to moderate hearing loss in both ears.
Do you happen to know what the initial screening was when she was born? Because the ABR is the more advanced screening tool that will be used, like you had at 6 weeks. Do you know if that's what was done when she was
born? It was an ABR. It was definitely an ABR.
Okay.
We've since had audiologists look back at the results.
That's what
somebody else, and they have said that they're actually it is not. It was it did show some
interpretation
of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it is what it is. It's fine. So you know, we did a lot of retests. We saw a number of different people.
Can imagine getting extra opinions.
Yeah, there's, you know, when someone tells you like you're one test away from your child wearing hearing aids for the rest of their life, you're like, okay, well, I'm going to process all this and I'm going to get a lot of different opinions because I have no idea about anything of the world of hearing loss. So we just went into like pure tactical mode, just trying to learn everything we could. Number of audiologists we saw, and they all said the same thing, mild to moderate hearing loss, a sensory neural hearing loss. And so we quickly got her hearing aids. She was about 15 months old or so at that point, and got her into, we're in New York, so we have early intervention, which has been great for us. Got her, you know, a teacher of the deaf, speech therapy, and started moving forward and adapted to the new normal. She did great with her hearing aids. She did great in her therapy. And then after about a year or so of constant pretty continual monitoring, her hearing started dropping. And over a 6 month period, it went from mild to moderate all the way down to severe, profoundly deaf in both ears.
You know, it's interesting that you had mentioned the idea of processing when they first give you this information and going into tactical mode. I think that's a really important thing for the audiologists that are listening to hear. We've talked about it on other podcasts that it's so much information in that initial appointment where you're identifying the loss that oftentimes the parent is not hearing all of it and it's too much. That what we like to do is once we identify, come back in a week. Gives you time to process, and then maybe more of that information is heard and internalized. So I think that that's a really important point that you made, that processing for you as the parent getting this information is so important. And the clinician needs to respect that and give space for the patient and the family to process that information.
I think that's great. I agree, because once you hear, you know, if you're not expecting for any kind of diagnosis, right, your child has hearing loss in this case, everything else is like, you know, Charlie Ballant, wah, 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 wah. You're just spinning, right? And so, you know, I think it's good to follow the lead of the parent. Like, if they're seeming like they're just like totally overwhelmed, give them a little space. But then, like, other people might be like, I want everything. I want it all naps. I want to figure it out. And you want them to get the information from you and not to Google, right? Like, right. Because you're going to be going on Google and you're going to be finding out all this crazy stuff. And so it's kind of like a give and take, like, here it is, like, just process it, but, you know, come back. I like that idea about come back and talk about it. Or even one of the things that was really, really helpful for us is that we had some professionals, our audiologists, and then ultimately the people we were working with through early intervention that put us in touch with other families. Mm-hmm. And that was helpful because we didn't know any families that had kids with hearing loss, and just talking to them, gave us a lot of, piece, I guess, around they were much further stage in their journey. And hearing from them are the same things that I say now to people that are just starting off in their journey. You know, like, it's crazy right now. Let yourself feel all the emotions, do all the stuff, because it's a change. It's a change of what you thought, but things will be fine. They will be. They're
that's,
fine.
That's why we're doing this, because for parents who are listening, We want for them to hear from people who have experienced this and have gone through all the steps, gone through the challenges. Maybe it'll make it easier for them hearing from people who have kids who are now thriving.
I love that.
In an earlier podcast, we have a mother and daughter, and you hear kind of the transformation within the story of, oh, wow, her life is going to be so difficult and rough, and is this going to be terrible for her, to she's just fine. She's doing great, and yep, she's thriving, and this has made her a more resilient child. So
100%.
It's so important for other parents who are starting in this process to hear stories like yours that are reassuring, to let them know your child will be fine.
Yeah. And I say that all the time. I say, if I could have gone back and changed anything and made it so that Mila, and now my youngest also has hearing loss now, that was identified a year ago when she was 3.5. So a little bit different trajectory than Mila took. So Mila's in cochlear implants, Sophia's in hearing aids. I wouldn't change anything. Like, it's 100%. And I could talk more from Mila's perspective, because Mila now has, you know, had a hearing loss for eight years or so now. But, it's 100% made her the resilient, strong, independent character person that she is. And sure, she has some struggles that other, you know, she has some struggles that kids that have typical hearing don't have, but everybody has their own struggles, whether they're visible or invisible. Everyone has things that are more challenging for them than for other people. This is just her thing, but it doesn't in the grand totality of thing of it, it does not make her life worse because she has hearing loss. It makes her better because of that. And so I think it's just important to surround ourselves with the right support network and professionals to just continue to help her with the things that are tricky for her, and making sure that she's getting the right mapping appointments for her cochlear implants, making sure that she has the right access to sound, making sure that we're supplementing, you know, her language if we need to, and you know, with sign or things like that. But I think that she's, you know, we're in our normal, like, everything's just normal. And as things change a little bit, they're always going to, we adjust. And I think new parents, it's hard to, you can't make yourself get there until you're there. Like, you can hear from other parents and be like, okay, good. I'm looking forward to getting to that point where I feel like everything's just normal. And you're not thinking about the fact that your kids have hearing loss every day, all day. But you got to get there on your own. But you will.
It's interesting in what you're saying, that every child, every individual with hearing loss, whether it winds up getting treated with hearing aids or cochlear implants, they all have their own individual story. But there are very common threads that seem to be present in these stories. And over the course of the first few episodes of this podcast, we're having a couple parents with little kids. We're having a parent and daughter who are high school age, and we're going to be having adults who started as kids with CI. And you can see as they get older, how the stories evolve, and seeing those common threads throughout those stories, I think that parents who are starting or earlier in the process, as you hear those common threads, can kind of hold on to them for reassurance that as much as there may be bumps in the road in the process, you can manage this.
Exactly. And, you know, I look to parents that have teenagers with cochlear implants and hearing aids, and I look at them for kind of support and advice and things like that. And I'm like, oh man, how am I going to deal with, you know, the normal teenage angst and everything? Plus, you know, maybe her taking her cochlear implants off. She doesn't want to listen to what I'm saying. She doesn't do that now, but it'll come. Yep. But you know, you just kind of, you navigate the journey as you can, as best you can. And I think it's important to, you know, respect your child's wishes around, you know, how, if they want to show them off, you know, we've always taken a strong approach of, let's be confident about wearing cochlear implants. Like when we first got our cochlear implants, we were able to choose two pairs, and we chose a brown pair that blended in with her hair because she was three. We didn't know. We said, mm-hmm. We don't know if there's going to be, and you know, 5+ years, you're going to have these four. So we don't know if she's going to want to just have them blend in. And then we chose a white pair that would stand out. She has always chosen the white pair, like we said.
So interesting.
Yeah. And I asked her recently, now that, you know, she's almost eight, I asked her recently, I said, which pair do you like better? She said, I like the white ones. I said, why do you like them better? She said, because I like how they show up better against my hair, and I can show off the decals better because we put decals on them and things like that. And that made me so proud. But also at the same time, I respect the fact that she's older, if she wants to do something different, that's fine with me too, right? So
that leads to very important conversations that we have with parents, certainly in the hearing aid end of the conversation when we newly identify a hearing loss. So here you have a child who we're telling them that they need something that's going to make them different in school, different amongst their peers. And a lot of times parents are very uncomfortable with that idea. And one of the things I like to caution against is parents projecting their own discomforts to their child. Mm-hmm. So one thing that we've done in terms of like tag teaming when this occurs, we had a specific instance with a patient where we could feel the parent's discomfort with the idea of their child's hearing loss and hearing aids and wanting something that's hidden. And would say, oh, hey, can you just run one more test on the child so that we get the kid out of the room? It gives us an opportunity to talk to the parent and say, hey, from what our experience is, whatever is going to make the child most comfortable with this process is going to be what's best for them. So if what's most comfortable for them is choosing a color, it gives them some agency within the process. That here you have healthcare providers, parents, everybody is dictating to the child what needs to be done. But if we can give them small bits of agency within that and let them choose, there's so much value in that. So for parents listening to this who are new to the process, if you can try and look past your own discomfort with this diagnosis and give your child the space to maybe choose that color that, hey, it's pink, it's purple, it's blue, it's mm-hmm. neon, it has stickers, they can feel more comfortable and feel a sense of ownership over the devices and the process and the hearing loss. There's so much long-term value in that. So the fact that you gave her that space to have blending in and not blending in and you choose, I think you set her up for success with that.
I love that. And, you know, it's funny. So when Mila first, we identified that she had hearing loss and we got her hearing aids, we did not have an audiologist at the time that pushed us to choose color. And we chose a champagne color that blended in with her hair, whatever, it was fine. This time our youngest has hearing loss, we were with a different audiology practice. And the audiologist said, don't choose one that blends in. Let her choose. Like, it's so fun. Like, we totally recommend to the pediatric patients to be able to just go with a bright color. And yes. She chose a pink color. right? And then she's got purple sparkly molds with little animals kind of images on them. And I 100% agree, right? Like, I totally agree. Let them stand out because, listen, like, people are going to see them no matter what. Like, and that's great. But, like, if they're a cool, fun color with sparkly molds, like, let it be, like, a reflection of their personality, right? If that's their personality, right? And again, I agree. I've, like, let the kid dictate it a little bit more.
I've seen on Instagram that you have different little clippets that go on the cochlear implants that you change from day to day, and it's based on what she wants to wear to school that day. That's very cool.
Oh, yeah. We got the little well, Mila has always worn, until recently, she's always worn retention headbands with her cochlear implants. So we have, like, 30 sparkly, different colored pattern retention headbands. But recently now she wants to wear tape where she tapes it kind of double-sided tape behind her ears because she's growing up, you know? So the headband messes her hair up too much, but she still has the decals on there. And then Sophia, the little one with her hearing aids, she has like the little clips that hold it onto the back of her shirt. And we have tons of them now also. So it's a fun way to just, you know, add personality. And
How is it different for you when Mila was first diagnosed with hearing loss, when Sophia was diagnosed with hearing loss? Did you react similarly, different? How was it for you?
It was easier the second time around to process things because we already had a support network. We understood so much more about the world. We had been there, done that with another, you know, with Mila. But it's not easy, right? It was still surprising. You wouldn't think it's surprising, but it was still surprising to us because her hearing loss didn't start till she was 3 and a half. Mila started at 1 potentially beforehand. And so we kind of had gotten to the point where we're like, oh, I guess she doesn't have, like, we have an older son too, who doesn't have any hearing loss. So we just thought maybe it's just Mila, but, so it, you know, it was the same processing. Like, we had a lot more comfort and knowing we knew that things were going to be fine, but it's still hard to hear that, you know, that there's going to be, you know, that these are going to be potentially some of the things that might be challenge her, but it was way easier.
Was there a medical workup done to establish a potential underlying cause of their hearing losses?
It's unknown. Yeah, we've done genetic testing and it's not CMV. It's not CMV. It's, we don't know. Yeah.
It's a frustration we see for parents a lot of the times is that we oftentimes do not have an answer as to the underlying cause. One of the ways we'll explain it to parents is it's kind of like you're going fishing to see what you can find, but there's a good chance you're not going to get that identification, which can be very frustrating. Hey, it just is what it is. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times that's what the answer is.
Yeah. I'd be lying if I said, I wish I knew. Like, I really do. Like, I know it's not going to change anything. Like, once you have hearing loss, you have hearing sensorineural, right? Like, it is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it at this point in time. And there's nothing you can do to, a lot of times you can't really predict the trajectory it's going to take, right? Unless you know specifically if it's genetic, certain genetic reason. I wish we knew, just because it's more like just interested in knowing. So, you know, when we did the genetic testing, it was five or so years ago. And they said like, things have come so far. Like, 5 years before that, we only knew of 5 or so gene combinations. At that time, they knew 150 or so. They're like, come back in 5 years, we'll probably know of a ton more. Maybe it's one of those. Down the road, if they want to do that, maybe we will, just so that they know if they're carrying a gene, you know, just to be prepared for, you know, potential future kids or things like that. But
sure.
You know, can you tell us about the origins or the inspiration for writing the Mighty Mila book?
Yes. So it all came about for the most part because after Mila got her cochlear implants, she adapted really quickly to them. We were very fortunate. She was understanding what we were saying within a day or two of being activated. She was right back where she was in her speech therapy to where she was 6-7 months before that, when she had started losing her hearing. So she adapted to the cochlear implants beautifully. And we were reading books one night and she started flipping through one of her books and she got upset because none of the characters in this book had cochlear implants. And I told her that I was like, well, I have other books that have kids with cochlear implants, if that's what you want to see. But she pointed out, she's like, well, they're all about going to the doctor. Yeah, I guess they are, because we had a bunch that was like, so-and-so gets their, you know, gets a hearing aid, so-and-so has magic ears, so whatever, right? Like, they're all about the medical journey towards getting hearing aids or cochlear implants, which we bought them and they, you know, they were great. They were great for us. They were great for us to use. We're a three-year-old that we're trying to explain through books what's going to happen with her getting cochlear implants. Like, that's a lot of how we explain to her, much by reading stories about characters that this, you know, that were going through the same thing. So they were certainly critical, those types of books, at that point in our journey. But where we were then on the other side of getting cochlear implants, she needed to see what's next. Like, it's not, my life is not all about going to the doctor. Like, sure. Like, and we love going, like, she loves going to the audiologist. We make a fun day out of it. We travel down to the city. It's great. But she wanted to just see, like, herself reflected as a regular kid, because that's what she is, right? Her life isn't about just going to the doctor.
Absolutely.
Hearing it. So I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find anything really out there. Like, and so I was just like, I'm just going to write it. So I spent 2 years after work, doing like author courses and work groups and figuring out like, how do I find an illustrator, find an editor, do all this stuff. And so it took me about 2 years kind of, you know, working from, you know, 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock every most nights. And then I was able to publish Mighty Mila. And then 2 years later, I recently published Mighty Mila Dream Job, the second book. And so the focus is that my mission is that these books, one, they provide authentic, empowering representation to deaf and hard of hearing kids. It shows them as a full child that there is some references to hearing loss and their cochlear implants woven throughout, because it's part of their life, but it's not the sole focus of the book. So I want it to be empowering representation for kids to be able to see themselves as a full character in a story that's just a fun story, not about not a medically focused story. And then another thing is, like, if we really want kids, other kids that don't have hearing loss, or maybe have never met anyone that has hearing loss, to understand more, to know more about what cochlear implants are, what hearing aids are, they learn so much through storybooks, right? Like, that's part of a lot of kids' normal daily lives, is to read books. And if they can get to know a character that's just like them, but they just happen to have hearing loss, I think they'll be more prepared in real life when they actually meet someone, and it'll encourage more kindness and respect and understanding for typical hearing kids to be like, oh, cool, you have cochlear implants, I have a book like that, versus like, what are those things on your ears, right? Like, it just opens up the conversation a little bit more productively and respectfully. So I'm really proud of the fact that, like, I hear from a lot of people that those two goals are coming to fruition. People reach out to me, parents of kids with hearing loss, saying that their kid feels inspired and that they feel connected to Mila, mm-hmm, because of the book. And then other parents who have kids that have never met anyone with hearing loss, they're like, oh, this is one of my kids' favorite books. And they saw someone at the playground the other day with hearing aids, and they were so excited because, you know, they know a character that has hearing loss too. So
what you're doing makes it something that is just something you're going to encounter in childhood. And it doesn't have to be this big thing or any sort of negative connotation. It's just, hey, she has her ears and she has those devices and she's just a kid I want to play with at the playground. That's right. How it should be for little kids interacting with each other. And it's great that you're contributing to fostering that sort of mindset out in the world. So I think it's wonderful.